FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and guess what? It's October 2nd, 2018. Don't forget that October is National Lie to Your Pollster Month. Anybody calls you asking who you're going to vote for, tell them you're going to vote for John McCain, or tell them you're going to vote for Bernie. Tell them anything but the truth, because before there was fake news, there was polling. And polling is the epitome of fake news. In fact, polling is not news. It's a survey. And if you help make the results unreliable, they'll stop doing it, or they'll just stop doing it, stop polling, and just publish false results. Either way, it'll become even more inaccurate than it is already. We urge you to honor National Lie to Your Pollster Month. Hey, as always, be a part of the show. Join us. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, trade is all in the news. It looks like there's a superseding agreement to replace the drastically flawed NAFTA agreement. China is starting to buckle under lower stock prices and a slowing economy. There's a whole plethora of trade issues that are coming to fruition now. Person who was in on trade as a major issue, both in the election and in governance, is our good friend Michael Stumo, CEO of Coalition for a Prosperous America. And Michael, we welcome you back.
Hi, Kerry. It's great to be here.
Hey, it's great to be here, and it's great to be talking about great news for America, as one of our other guests, Gerald Lomero, is fond of saying. This really is good news for America, isn't it?
It really is. It shows that the administration's tactics to create leverage and to upset where the trade system has been, where it's been, we've been getting the short end of the stick, where they've been creating leverage with tariffs and steel and aluminum and the like, it causes other players, other countries to come to the table and make a new deal where they were unwilling to do it before.
Hey, and you know, Trump has said the U.S. has been the piggy bank of the world since World War II, in any event, really arguably back to World War I. I mean, It's high time, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And, you know, after World War II, when we were indeed the last country standing, so to speak, we were 50% of the world economy, and you had a better argument for helping others out than who were just sort of, you know, demolished. But now we're just 22% of the world economy. China is rivaling us for regional and global superpower status, and we can't be the piggy bank anymore. We just don't have the money.
Hey, and that's true on so many levels, both domestic and certainly with international trade. I mean, really, Trump, everyone said this was going to be bad. This was going to start a trade war. You know, my contention here, Michael, from the beginning, is that there's no such thing as a trade war. This is a media construct, and that basically the trade war was in the mind of the media only. There's no such thing as a trade war. There's economic rivalries, but those don't really rise to the level of a trade war, do they?
Right. Yeah, it's economic rivalry. There's some trade rivalry. Trade war doesn't exist. I mean, countries are always doing their own trade strategies. But when they talk trade war, it is only when we do something. But when China or other countries do some intervention, that's not a trade war, only when we do it. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I think that Trump has put the lie to it. But there's, you know, when was the last time you saw a headline, Trump's trade war?
5 minutes ago.
It seems to be dying out as a meme, right?
Yeah, I guess it is, because they really are. They're coming around and seeing what he's harvesting of it. But with China, they're still calling it a trade war. And when we start, when we get two or three more months under our belt with China, we'll see it die out as far as that one, that country as well.
Yeah, and China is, they're starting to lift tariffs. They're going to probably start to lift non-tariff trade barriers? Because, look, now that the U.S. has settled with Canada, with Mexico, with the EU, with Korea, with Japan, it's kind of starting to look like China is isolated, isn't it?
Right. And China's just a different country, right? They're communist run. They're state-directed capitalism. They're trying to rival us again, as I mentioned, for superpower status. President Xi, I mean, they've been China first before we were America first. And President Xi is doubling down on that. They have not admitted that they're doing anything wrong with their commercial espionage against the U.S. And Trump may very well go with another $267 billion in tariffs on top of the existing $250 billion, which would kind of cover trade across all trade from China. So it could be that we are in a period of decoupling from China. We'll see, but that could be what happens.
And I find the whole thing really fascinating, Michael, because the so-called know-it-all said, no, you can't do this. Canada, it's like the 51st state in Mexico. The country will go under. And, you know, I think there is something else in the Mexico agreement, because there's these side letter agreements that don't get exposed to the public for quite a while. But Trump mentioned during his press conference where he announced the agreement with Mexico that they were going to do something about illegal border crossers. I've said from the get-go, from the moment that Trump put the pressure, put the squeeze on Mexico, that what was going to happen was the Mexican government would be sending their military to fortify their side of the border. Nothing's been told about it or said about it. It's just an inkling that I have because, look, immigration and trade, they're really opposite sides of the same coin, aren't they?
Well, sure. There's free movement of goods and services, which has been a real problem as companies offshore or, you know, and re-export to the U.S. consumer market. There's free movement of people, which is a huge debate, which you're just addressing right now. There's free movement of capital, which has been a problem for us because incoming foreign money is driving our dollar up too high. So we're non-competitive. So you need a little bit of friction in the system, and there's validity for any nation to, you know, put a little friction in its own national interests on the cross-border movement of goods, services, capital, and people.
Hey, and really, it's just the national interest. Every country is supposed to act in its own best interest, hopefully not while injuring other countries, right? At least if we're a nation of nations, a commonwealth of nations, if you will. But the U.S. hasn't acted in its own interest since, I guess we go back really after World War One. We've not acted in our economic best interest.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we've determined ourselves as leader of the free world, and that we, you know, we were with the Cold War, leader of the free world. But yeah, we gave away big pieces of our economy to other countries in the hopes that they would be friends of ours, and in some cases that worked fine. But now, you know, China hasn't grown through free trade. They've grown through mercantilism, through trade cheating. To their credit, they've dragged, you know, hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, but the bill has been footed by the U.S. consumer and U.S. industry. And so we just simply can't afford to fund China's rise anymore, or India's rise, or if Africa gets its act together economically to fund the billions in Africa, their rise. They have to find a different model besides the U.S. consumer.
Yeah, so totally correct. Couldn't have stated it better myself. It's, Harry Brown, great economist, free trade economic Austrian economist, said the role of the government in modern trade today is to act as the accommodating loser. And you see that when governments intercede in foreign trade to support their currency, they buy up their currency in the marketplace to create artificial demand to raise the price of their currency against others. And what happens is they lose billions of dollars in the process. I think the U.S. has been the ultimate accommodating loser, willing to lose trillions of dollars, destroy industries, destroy towns, destroy cities and states And what did we get out of this, Michael?
Yeah, we got deindustrialization, low-quality jobs, a shift from full-time, meaningful work that you can retire with dignity on to the gig economy of holding down three jobs, low-quality jobs, you know, short week hours, lower wages, and a myth of full employment in that low job quality environment. So we flipped, you know, good manufacturing and full-time jobs for, you know, burger flippers and frappuccino servers.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
The right hire can make a huge impact on your business. That's why it's so important to find the right person. But where do you find that individual? You could try posting on the job boards, but can you really be sure the right person sees your job? Instead, find the person who will help you grow your business with LinkedIn. As the world's largest professional network, people go to LinkedIn every day to grow professionally and discover job opportunities. And 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. LinkedIn Jobs matches people to your role based on more of who they really are, their skills, interests, and even how open they are to new opportunities. This way, your job gets seen by more of the right people. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members are open to new opportunities. So you can only reach them on LinkedIn. That's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. And businesses rate LinkedIn 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. Hurry over to LinkedIn.com/FSN and get $50 off your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/FSN to get $50 off your first job post. LinkedIn.com/FSN. Terms and conditions apply.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yeah, hey, and I like a good frappuccino as much as the next person, but a frappuccino barista is not a substitute for a good paying blue collar job, and really isn't as productive. I mean, what happens with the frappuccino? You drink it and it's gone, and then no economic activity happens till you order the next frappuccino. But with blue-collar jobs, working-class jobs, producing goods, those goods find their way into the economy and the money gets circulated around the economy. Certainly, wealth creation is greater for making an I-beam that's going to go in a building or on a bridge than it is to build a frappuccino, which is going in your belly.
Right. In the global competition for good jobs and industries, you got to have a substantial part in the industries of the future. And that's a lot of, you know, existing core manufacturing, but also the advanced manufacturing. You know, we have the auto industry, which absorbs a lot of workers, a lot of capital, produces a lot of innovation. You know, the computers in the cars are rival anything else, you know, aerospace, et cetera. We've lost industries like semiconductors, LED lighting, robotics, et cetera, which if we had those industries would employ a lot of people. And we have about 10 or 11% of our economy is manufacturing. And people say, well, manufacturing is going away. But Germany doesn't believe that. South Korea, Japan, they have double or triple the proportion of manufacturing in their economy. They have robots. They have more robots than we do. And it isn't the end of work. It's just the robots, some automation, and people work, you know, together. But you need that. And understand you're not going to educate our way out of this, because 66% of the workforce doesn't have a college degree, a four-year college degree. Not that they should. That's just the nature of a workforce. You've got to have an economy that provides good jobs for everyone, including recognizing the fact that, you know, most of every country's workforce is not going to have a PhD.
Yeah, exactly. What you're saying is so true. Historically, under 30% of the U.S. population attended college. And look, if a kid really wants to attend college and has a strategy how that degree is going to make them a more successful, productive person, I'm all in favor of it. And we need people to take liberal arts courses for sure. But right. Humanism, feminism, womenism, and social justice warrior making isn't going to help the country, or isn't going to help you if you get a degree in one of those. On, you know, there's so many absurd ones around here. Let's face it, Michael. And how does that prepare you for the new economy?
Well, yeah, that's right. And there's a lot of jobs happening right now. I mean, a lot of our members are intermediate goods producers. In other words, they're part of these supply chains for defense, aerospace, automotive, and the like. And they're really growing. The steel and aluminum tariffs have raised their prices a bit, but they're able to pass it on. It's not they're busier than they've ever been. They're buying new equipment to replace the old stuff. They're seeing business come back from China, and they're hiring people that want to work, that don't have opiate addictions, don't have iPhone addictions, that'll show up, and they just need solid people to work, and they pay good salaries. They're giving wage increases. People that run machines, welders, you know, all kinds of things that you can just even do apprenticeship training for out of high school.
And that is a great point. One of our frequent guests, a guy by the name of Lou Weiss, who does manufacturing talk radio, is that the manufacturing sector has way more jobs than bodies out there applying for them, and that the wages, that the compensation is way above what many college grads are receiving once you graduate from college. And you know, it's not unusual to see factory workers making six-figure incomes, especially when you add in the benefits and everything that comes along with it.
Right. And so as we go forward, these wages are going to be coming up, which is one of my member CEOs said, we're having to raise wages to attract people. And if you raise wages to attract people, that means you got to raise wages for the people that you've already got working for you. But he said that's a really good problem, because it's wage increases that give people good lives, allow them to buy the very things you make. And that's why Henry Ford doubled his workers' wages in 1914. That creates the virtuous cycle of wage earning and consumption to keep the business cycle going.
Hey, and I think, you know, unionization has really stood in the way here, but we see a lot more states now have gone for right to work. We had that momentous Supreme Court decision, which said that if you're a public worker, a city, state, municipal, whatever, you can't be forced into unionization. And what do you think the long-term result of that is going to be?
Well, I'm of two minds with the unionization, because there was a time in our country when workers were treated extremely poorly, and they needed a little bit of organizing in order to push back against the robber barons of the day that did treat them poorly. So there's a role for giving the wage portion of our economy a voice, and not just the multinational capital part of our economy the voice, because again, wages are the big thing, but it's what most of us live on rather than our stock portfolio. So it can go either way, in my view.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. And what we saw with the auto manufacturers is a lot of damage done by the unions. You had overtime fraud, you had time and attendance fraud, you had many things that unions really fraudulent practices that they engaged in that really were injurious to their masters, to their corporations, their employers that you work for.
Right. It's a matter of how you implement it. You know, Germany is probably the most booming modern type economy that we have on the planet these days. They're actually a big trade problem because they overproduce and ship their overproduction to us and other countries. But they're highly unionized. They have a high, you know, quality. They actually have a nice relationship between the worker side, between the unions and the business there, and seem to get along pretty well. So I think you can implement these models, in good ways, bad ways, and everything in between.
And you do want to see your workers. If the company's prospering, the company's employees need to prosper too. It can't just go into stock buybacks and stock options and bonuses for management. The boots on the ground really need to participate in any prosperity. But on the other hand, if the company's not doing well, then the employees need to feel some pain as well. And I'm not talking about unfairly penalizing them, but they're in it together, right? It's shared benefits and shared burdens. And I think that if the unions actually saw management, you know, tighten their belts when times are bad, they would be more apt to do it themselves as well.
Definitely. And that's what we've seen across the board, that if the management and the CEOs don't tighten their belts and make everybody do it, nobody likes it at all. At Nucor Steel, which is one of the companies on our board, Dan D'Amico is a former chair of Nucor, who's chair now of our board. When there was a slowdown in 2008, management took a 40 to 50% cut, and all the employees did. There was nobody that was untouched, but they didn't lay anybody off.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody took a pay cut. They slowed down. Everyone shared the pain. They're not unionized. They just simply did it. Not everywhere, but Nucor is unique.
Yeah, well, Nucor is like the new breed of steel producers, and it's a major success story in its own right. And no doubt, a lot of their success has come from these types of practices.
That's right. And if we didn't have the China shock of the Chinese products flooding our market with subsidized, stolen, whatever you have at technology and production, you would have that took out so many of our companies and made them sort of on life support. You would have had a lot more wage growth, because when you start throwing your market into direct competition with subsidized low-wage China, you lose pricing power and wages stagnate. And that's another way, when they've taken wealth out of our economy that we would have otherwise expected but for their bad practices.
Yeah. So, and just like the company's in it together, the world's in it together as well. And we need to stop with yes, you put your own country's interest ahead of the rest of the world. I don't think that's unreasonable. And I don't think anybody could believe that's unreasonable. But you can't be a parasitic entity, like on that old Star Trek episode where it was a big barrel-shaped thing and it ate up planets and universes and stuff. You know, you just can't.
Like the Borg.
Yeah, right? You can't have that in this day and age.
You protect your national interests to the extent that you harm others.
Yeah, and you can't deliberately go out to harm others in furthering your national interest, not just protecting it, but actually furthering it at the expense of all others.
Right.
Hey, so, well, it's got to be a great time for you. You've been kind of ahead of the curve on all of this. Tell us again about your organization and how we get more involved with it.
Yeah, actually, when you say that, I remember one staffer in Congress said, you guys are like Nostradamus. Mm-hmm. Everything you said 3 years ago is coming true. But we're at prosperousamerica.org.
Hey, and keep up the great work, Michael. Hey, again, email us, kl@carrylutz.com. If you're listening on YouTube, we'll be doing videos shortly. I know I promised yesterday, didn't quite work out, but click that subscribe button, click the bell, click the share, click the like button as well, and we'll be doing lots more of it, promise. And again, just take a look at our Facebook page. We'll be doing Facebook Live. We'll be doing YouTube Live. Finally got the hang of video, finally cracked the code, and I look forward to all of you watching us in the near future. Hopefully we won't get shadow banned like we have been in the past, for before they even called it shadow banning. Again, just visit the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Don't forget, we've got our 11 medical hacks. I personally have saved over $50,000 in the past 4 years using these hacks. You can save a similar amount or perhaps even more if you've got a family. You can't afford to ignore it. And the best thing is, your quality of healthcare will at least stay the same or perhaps even get better, and you'll be more in control of the decisions you make. Anyways, Michael, always great having you on. We'll talk to you again soon. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Carrie. Pleasure to be here.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.